Patient cases can really help demonstrate the issues that come up in lung cancer treatment. During this program, you'll be meeting three patients with different stories. The first is Lisa from West Bloomfield, Michigan. Lisa's case illustrates a number of issues in formulating, carrying out, and adjusting a treatment plan.
I was raised going to the state fair every single year, and I was taught to make problems into adventures. So now I am grown up, have a wonderful family, a wonderful husband and daughter, and we do the same things. There are always ups and downs with cancer and cancer treatments. The point is to look at it like a roller coaster and know that where you're going down, there's an up coming up again, and to hold hands really, really tight with the people on the ride with you. Initially, I was having a lot of problems with my right arm, so I went for a CT scan of the shoulder. And during that CT scan, the radiologist saw some nodules and took it upon herself to order a CT of the entire lung. And she found several nodules in the right lobe. When I got that phone call, they couldn't believe it, but it was lung cancer. That was the start of the big, long-lasting stomach drop.
I think it took a little while to kind of get my arms around that. I was dumbfounded.
She has a form of lung cancer called bronchioalveolar carcinoma. The bronchioalveolar carcinomas are a relatively uncommon form of cancer that tends to occur in multiple nodules throughout a person's lung. When we see somebody with multiple lung nodules, the goal of treatment is to try and keep the cancer in check. Lisa underwent surgery to remove several nodules within her lung, and when they resected those nodules, half of them were the bronchoalveolar type of carcinoma, and half were a premalignant condition. Then she developed other nodules and opted to undergo further surgery.
They operated twice on the right lung, and then they were going to do the left lung, but the right lung came back again, and they said, there is no point.
The options at that point were either to watch and wait, which is what I recommended, since the bronchoalveolar cancer can be relatively slow growing. The other option is to treat her with some form of chemotherapy or chemotherapy-like drug. In October 2002, she started taking nidofitinib. What we did know at that time was that people with her clinical profile, non-smokers with this bronchoalveolar type of cancer who are women, do seem to do better with this drug. So she was really treated with this drug based on her clinical characteristics that predicted favorable response. So the nodules, the hazy areas that all represent the bronchoalveolar cancer all look the same over this period of time. And that's a really good thing that nothing has changed.
Yes, it is.
I've been following her on that medication now 6.5 years. In the lung cancer world, 6.5 years is a very long period of time, particularly in someone who presented with stage 4 disease. She is a strong-willed individual who just wants to keep going and is going to keep going for quite some time now.
I have tended to think more of life as a journey. We are moving to Southern California for the weather. My body feels tensed up from the cold and causes more pain. And we all have trouble breathing. And because the health issues stop us from living a good quality life year-round. When I first got diagnosed with the lung cancer, I saw a whole lot of possibilities. But it was never the possibility of living my life as happily, as healthy, as fully as I am able to do. I no longer look at success as beating this or curing this cancer, but I look at success in terms of every milestone I am able to share with my family. So, as far as I'm concerned, I am successfully surviving. And the fact that I still have cancer, as long as it can live with me, I can live with it. I have a full life, and I never anticipated that.
So that was a great video, and I think it showed a lot of important aspects of what it's like to be living with cancer. I think the first thing from the oncologist standpoint is how lung cancer, despite the prognosis that many people face, can be a chronic illness. And there are many twists and turns throughout that illness, and that people can live a long time. The second thing I think it showed is how people really want to get back to their normal life. And the things that were important to them before cancer are still important to them. They want to see their kid, you know, hit that ball at the baseball game. They want to be able to go to that PTA meeting. They want to see their grandchild in that recital. And these are the real important things to them. And helping people make each one of those milestones is probably important to them. And for us, I mean, it's probably the most rewarding thing about oncology. And the fact we can do that now with the treatments like she received.
Gefitinib and erlotinib are very similar, but gefitinib can only be given to patients that have already had a response to it because it's not on the market for routine use, while erlotinib is on the market for routine use, and they're very similar drugs.
Lisa's doctor specifically mentioned the type of non-small cell lung cancer that she has, and though we've already talked about criteria for some first-line regimens, what other treatments require considering cancer type?
Well, the last one that we discussed about adenocarcinoma with pemetrexate and cisplatin, one of the first used a targeted therapy with bevacizumab, which is an anti-angiogenesis drug. And the study actually showed bevacizumab plus chemotherapy versus chemotherapy alone was more successful in treating patients with the adenocarcinoma. What was interesting is in the study that was done by Dr. Sandler, the two-year survival rate was 22%. We never talked about 22% two-year survival rate with standard chemotherapy. And in the comparison to the chemotherapy alone, the two-year survival rate was only 15%. So it was a significant advance, and the survival, overall survival, was statistically significant.
All right, well, we're hearing more and more about testing for specific gene mutations and other cancer markers, tumor markers, rather, in cancer care. What role does this play in choosing treatment in advanced non-small cell lung cancer?
Yeah, well, Lisa's story is one of the most dramatic and most wonderful things that's happened in the care of lung cancer in decades. You saw Lisa get her life back simply by taking one tablet every day. And that is true. And there are tens of thousands of people like Lisa in the country today that got their life back by taking a pill. How does this pill work? It sounds almost too good to be true. Well, as it turns out, we now know a proportion of people that have this disease we call non-small cell lung cancer have a very specific mutation in the cancer, not in you, in the cancer. And there are tests that can be done to find whether or not that mutation is present in the tumor specimen that your surgeon would remove in the part of your care or in your biopsy specimen. If you have that mutation, it virtually guarantees benefit from these pills, either gefitinib or erlotinib. You have a 7 or 9 out of 10 chance of having benefit from these pills. And they have a much different group of side effects associated with them. The usual side effects people talk about, affecting the blood count, the hair, nerve damage, that doesn't happen with these pills. They do have some side effects, mainly rash, but it's very different. And just like you saw with Lisa, she can go on with her life. So what's happened recently is we have this technology to test for this. And if you're one of the patients with cancer that have this genetic abnormality, these pills will be given as the first treatment. And most physicians give those pills by themselves. So as crazy as it sounds, you're told you have lung cancer that's spread throughout your body. It may be in the brain and the bones and the liver and everywhere else. And you walk out of the doctor's office with a prescription for a pill. And within days, you're better.
Wow.
We've discovered additional mutations, additional types of genetic damage in lung tumors as well. And already these types of mutations have been shown to predict whether or not a certain treatment is going to work for you. So this story that Lisa, you know, beautifully told today is being repeated as more testing is done on these tumor specimens and people are given specific treatments for those specific mutations. And this is the future we're all hoping for as oncologists and all hoping for, obviously, for our patients.
Yeah, I think many hospitals now are routinely doing these mutation analyses. And what's interesting, I think this is the beginning, and we talk to the future about personalized medicine, that we're going to individualize our treatment based on mutations, based on histology.
The other aspect of this, too, is that while it's great to be to have this characteristic in the cancer because it clearly defines a treatment that is very effective, good information is learned if you don't have it, because rather than give you the gefitinib or erlotinib, which would have no effect upon you and make you suffer the side effects of that treatment, your doctor can instead move on to a treatment with a much higher likelihood of benefit.
I mean, I think one other point that, you know, I think we should be talking about too is, you know, if you get a response to these drugs, the response is not, we're not talking in months, we're talking about years. And I really think that this story is certainly one that I seem to see a lot more often in clinic these days as opposed to years ago when I first started.
Gentlemen, throughout the discussion, we've briefly mentioned chemotherapy and radiation and other medical treatments. The question is it important to combine radiation and chemotherapy in treating advanced cancer?
Certainly over the last 25 years or so, we've seen a significant improvement in outcomes, adding chemotherapy to radiation. And over the last number of years, we've been trying to figure out how to sequence them about adding chemotherapy and radiation at the same time. Unfortunately, one of the problems that we do face when we're doing chemotherapy and radiation at the same time, we do see a significant benefit. We also see a significant increase in the risks of side effects from this treatment. Now, from that standpoint, one of the biggest improvements in radiation have been trying to change how the radiation is given and actually being able to spare certain structures to try and minimize some of that toxicity to make it more tolerable for patients. Again, we do the similar kind of thing, that we want to look at patients' performance status and weight losses before we evaluate them, making sure that they're able to tolerate it, as well as looking at the volume of disease and making sure that they're able to tolerate it. What I think is the most important technology that's come about is being able to image the patient in the treatment position prior to each day's treatment. And basically what we're able to do is we look at the tumor and making sure that it's where it's supposed to be. It's not, you know, above, below, or the side, or the patient hasn't developed pleural effusion that has moved the tumor. And these are things that we see if we're not imaging them actually on a daily basis, because it doesn't always correlate with symptoms. And there are other technologies that we have used, as well as using four-dimensional technology just to incorporate respiratory motion into treatment. And all these technologies have led to at least one study that's actually shown that technology itself has shown an improvement in survival, as well as decreased side effects, at least from one large single institution study.
Can I just make a comment that I thought it was very interesting in reading the reports of combining simultaneous chemotherapy and radiation rather than giving the two together, that, as you mentioned, clearly there can be more side effects during the time the radiation is given than shortly after. But I think uniformly in those various clinical trials that tested those two different approaches, a year later, people had the same degree of debility. So even though it would cause more problems, in the long term, they were not serious. But what wonderfully happened is 2 and 3 years later, people that got radiation simultaneously, they were living free of cancer, and 5 years later, there were more people alive with their disease. So it's a tough investment, I think, during the treatment, but long-term, the side effects were really not much worse than getting them one after the other, but the outcomes were much better.
No, I agree 100%. It's during the treatment itself, and that's why patient selection for these treatment modalities is probably still the most important thing.